my attention to Councillor Irwin to invite Daniel, who came, who is the director of the Center for Health Promotion, came to us from Brazil. Thank you very much.
Yes.
We can use this one once again.
Is this one?
Forward, yeah. It's like forward, backward, and this is point.
Right. Okay. So, about the, I hope you still...
We are.
You're still here? Not dreaming about the toilet, maybe? So, there is some controversy on what Claudia was saying about Arequipa being the most beautiful city in the world, as you can see from this picture. Rio is called a wonderful city, and it has some different views on it. This is also another picture taken in Rio, which is depicts a very ugly part of the city, ugly aspect of the city, which is Rio's main problem, and the main problem of, I would say, most South American, Latin American city, which is inequality. And this is the slogan of the National Commission on Social Determinants of Health in Brazil. Inequity is our main disease. And it's easy to understand why inequity is bad for everyone, not only for the poor. Because deep inequities end up destroying the social fabric, end up undermining the quality of life for the whole society. And this is demonstrated scientifically. British Medical Journal 2009, the last issue of this is very, very new. It's from last month. Showing that there's an editorial showing that there's more and more evidence that an equal society hosts a series of huge problems, and the benefits of greater equality would benefit the whole of society, not only the poor. This is not only intuitively there, but also scientifically more and more demonstrated. So I'll give you just some very brief, since I'm a doctor and I'm talking about health, which is the main theme of the next 3 days. Just a few data which are pretty impressive on how inequality is bad for health, bad for everyone's health. So you see, for example, here Nairobi slums have a mortality rate, an infant mortality rate 200% larger than the rich parts of the city. This is also true for Brazilian slums, for example. The number one killers in the world, which are chronic diseases, which usually before they were called civilization disease, they were diseases of the northern countries, now are much more prevalent among the poor, which has rising tobacco consumption, much more difficulties in having access to physical activity, to good nutrition, and so on. And still they have problems of access to health services. In my city, for example, it's very easy and pleasant to put a sports attire and go to Ipanema Beach to run, but in large parts of the city, this is not the reality. And this causes things, abominations, like you see here, for example, a working class person in Glasgow has a lower life expectancy than many people in developing countries. And across the street, there is a life expectancy which is 30 years larger. So you can gain 30 years just by moving a block. This is true in Washington, this is true in Rio, this is true in many cities of the world. This kind of map is really nice helping us to visualize inequities. This shows the size of countries according to the AIDS prevalence. So you see how Africa, India, and most of the southern hemisphere almost compress the world upwards, while when you look at public health expenditures, you see exactly the mirror image and it's not very difficult to understand. Violence as a public health issue is a South American tragedy. The numbers are difficult to understand. We're talking about 2,000 people, 2,000 black, young, uneducated males being killed every year in Rio. It's not in 10 years. It's every year 2,500 young boys are being killed in my city, only in my city. This is genocide. There's no other name for that. Another genocide. Cars are killing people. In Brazil, 50,000 people die every year. In Australia, there are 800 people. 80%, 85% of roads and accidents there are in developing world, and most of the people are poor. Look at the amount of money which is lost in this tragedy, and amount of suffering which is caused by this thing. And some information, some data on the differences in a city like São Paulo, which is the global city of Brazil. Now you have difference up to 100,000 times more privileges in certain areas than others. So many of these inequalities, pregnancy rates, adolescent pregnancy rates, child labor, diseases, this is very much connected with the urban environment. These are much greater in the slums, and precisely those boys, for example, who are dying in the slums are the ones who have not access to public services, not only education and health, but services like sports, like recreation, like cultural options. And those inequities are unfair, unacceptable, and unnecessary. They are avoidable. So when you look at environmental health and the future ahead of us, when you look at this map, these are the greenhouse gas, the largest greenhouse gas emitters in the world. And when you look at who are suffering from these damages, another time, again, the mirror map. And this is such an irony. Such a tragic irony. I think we need some British humor to understand that. I'll let you read this. You know, the rich will find the world a little bit unpleasant. The poor will die. And here you see a very good example of. I like this picture because it looks like a scissors cutting. Cutting nature in a city, and this is a slum growing into an environmental reservation area. Because of inequality and lack of policies to avoid that, everybody will suffer. The city will suffer as a whole. So the question is, when you're thinking about health, how do you solve all these problems? Is investing in health services good enough? This will suffice to solve all those problems. The question is how much good it does to treat people illnesses and then send them back to the conditions to keep society in the same condition that provoke all these illnesses and all these tragedies. This is the attitude the health sector used to have in regards to these problems. Especially in the Northern Hemisphere, more especially even in the United States, the health field was until very recently much more oriented into specific, very vertical, very focused research and ignoring all the other factors. While we know, all of us know, it's common sense that to build healthy communities and healthy individuals, we need everything which is here, which is basically what we have been talking all day. This is not a surprise, since we are all talking, we're on a conference that proposes what business can do for health. But we have been talking about health, we have been talking about urban agriculture, urban design, transportation, all the factors that builds good health for individuals and for communities. So health is socially determined. As you will see tomorrow in Sir Michael Marwood's presentation, he will probably be speaking about that. So how do we build healthy communities, especially in societies which are poor and which has problems, as we have been listed? So a society that is harmonic, it's funny because it's a similar graph to what Rene was using, but has another, it turns around a little bit, the organization. So if you have a society that has opportunities, representation, participation, and you have this society respecting an environment which is vital, respected, cared for, intelligently designed when it comes to built environment, you have an habitable community. If this community has a prosperous, a dynamic, and adaptable economy, and it doesn't predate environment, you have a sustainable community. And if this economy is well distributed because the society has this kind of characteristics, we'll have an equitable community. And the intersection between those three factors will build a healthy community. And the conclusion of recent research shows that community participation and governance, and good governance, are the factors that are most likely to enhance building healthy communities. So this is a conclusion of the paper which is the basis of this meeting, the WHO Commission on Social Determinants of Health report, saying that new models of governance are required to plan cities. They are designed in a way that physical, social, and natural environments prevents and ameliorate urban health risks, ensuring the equitable inclusion of all city dwellers. So we're talking about those two factors, governance and participation. And this is the framework that was created by the Global Research Network on Urban Health Equity, which is basically an unfolding of the WHO Commission, which states that these three factors are the most important ones on building health equity, which is here in the center: urban planning, urban sustainability, and social conditions, and urban governance as overarching condition. So, about community participation, we have more and more evidence that real participation, as opposed to cosmetic participation, which is much more frequent. We see programs mostly from governments proposing participation after everything is planned, after everything is decided. For example, in housing programs and slum upgrade programs, this is very common. And this is not effective participation. This is just cosmetic. So effective real participation is being more and more recognized as a fundamental component of social interventions. And this is recognizing that people who are part of the problems must be part of the solutions. And many times they have the solutions already. They live in the slums. They live in communities that have where very few services, but have a lot of very important resources. And many times they know the solutions, and many times they can be the solution. They can turn from being problems into being solutions. And we must take on what they have, the best assets they have, their talents, their associations, their networks. About governance, this is the definition we have been using in governance in the global network for research in urban equity. The sum of the many ways individuals and institutions plan and manage the common affairs of the city. And the purpose of governance is sustainable, equitable human development. It's well demonstrated that economic development is not enough. It can even aggravate health problems. And urban governance must respond to the needs of the most deprived groups in the city. Those are the four elements that defines good governance. So good governance have to have community participation. So it encompasses community participation as a main factor. It has to have a whole of governmental approach. So when you intervene in a territory, you must bring together different departments: education, health, transportation, urban affairs, etc. It has to be intersectoral. So it has to bring together private sector, social, civil society, etc. And it has to integrate up vertical integration as well. So state, provincial, federal, state, municipal, local governments. Bad city governance can produce disasters, such as what happened in São Paulo. I like to give São Paulo as an example. This is traffic in São Paulo. People spend 3 or 4 hours in traffic jams every day. Another very, very eloquent example of what happens with the water reservoirs in São Paulo. This is 20 years ago, and this is today. A very good example of bad governance. People are coming to live here because there's no government intervention here, because there's a law saying that this is a natural reservoir. It's an environmental reservation, so nothing can be done by the state. So the state doesn't intervene in the slums. Now they're starting to change these laws. So good governance can increase life expectancy in 30 years, can cut under 5 mortalities, and can turn places like this. This is a slum upgrade program which had a very good community participation approach into a place like this. It's a very sane community. I just want to finish with two illustrative cases of partnerships between, since this is a business for health event, with two cases of community participation and governance with the participation of the private sector. The first is one I've been working in for 20 years, the Network of Healthy Communities in Rio, which is a network that builds the capacity and promotes networking of community groups. 150 community groups right now, today, with 1.5 million people. We started mobilizing them about 10 years ago around HIV, and soon this network grew from an HIV perspective to a health promotion perspective, because it's very clear that HIV/AIDS has a social vulnerability condition. So it was easy to mobilize people on every single factor in health and help them plan their own interventions with their own resources. And from diagnostic of problems to build with their own resources the projects that solve problems in those communities. So there's a component of local development. They're creating their programs on different fields with their own resources or partnerships, empowerment of leaders, so better community leaders that can negotiate better resources for their programs, a component of collective action, so bringing those 150 communities together to negotiate with the private sector, with the society at large, with government, which results in community-based organizations developing knowledge and solution, gaining more power and more access to service. And Danone, as it has done in Bangladesh, is doing a beautiful program helping community leaders to adopt healthy nutrition and physical activity, supporting these leaders designing the programs with this methodology, with the participatory methodology. This is just some images of this program. So healthy nutrition, physical activities in Brazilian cultures. This is capoeira, this is football, of course, and which ends up in Danone having some better image, people consuming their products as well, of course. Those are the lessons learned. So to promote health advocacy development, we need real effective participation as a human right, so residents of communities can be active stakeholders for active development, not victims of disease. Diseases can be entry points for development. This is a very interesting conclusion. And the recognizing and tapping the potential of those communities to increase public health infrastructure and service delivery. And finally, a new initiative, which has 2 or 3 years maximum, which is a beautiful initiative, all in several cities in Brazil, in several cities of Latin America. Now it's about 40 cities in Brazil and all of South America, in which business associations and media groups are creating movements of urban governance. It's called the Network of Just and Sustainable Cities. So their goals are to monitor objective indicators and perception of citizen of quality of life annually, and demand based on this research, on the service, demand a more goal-oriented governance, evidence-based public policies directed to real city needs with budget allocation, reducing inequity. So this is in opposition of private agendas, which are basically the public policy in South America is much more private, defined by private interests than by public needs. Demand transparency and accountability. Corruption is a very serious problem. Promote citizen participation and responsibility and inclusion. So you see private groups, private sector groups working for inclusion. It's very unusual. So they have, these are some of the achievements of these movements. I won't stop on that. But just to finish, some ideas on the role of the private sector on the health field and how to promote health. First is government is a sector that can do only what is permitted, while civil society and the private sector can do everything that is not prohibited. So this is the place for creativity and for innovation. Remember, especially in the health field, health is a right, so the government role is crucial. It's an ethical imperative. We cannot replace government with private policies. Instead, we can use the political access, the political influence, the political weight of the private sectors to influence governance and give voice to the most excluded groups. And use the private sector best interest, which is the management capacity and resources to help the state to implement better public policies and act responsibly. A good example of that is that several companies in Brazil, for example, major developing companies, which has built their whole history on corruption, and that now are creating very beautiful company social responsibility programs. It's very incoherent. They don't pay taxes. They build their great developments for the double or three times the price because they bribe politicians. So companies, the private sector has to have these principles. Just to finish, this is a phrase of Trevor Hancock, which is a very nice Canadian health person who has created the program called Healthy Cities. So he says that real capital is not built just one form of capital, but by depleting the other three, they build all four forms of capital: social, economic, natural, and human.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.